Well, this is the interactive portion of the program. We take your stories and your questions with our special guest, Mark Hartzman, his book, Chasing Ghosts. We're going to talk with him a little bit about found on eBay. I want to just hear some of the weird things that he found. But we'll get to your calls when we come back. And welcome back. George Norrie back with Mark Hartzman. Mark, how in the world did you end up writing a book on eBay?
Well, yeah, it started with me looking for some weird sideshow memorabilia and finding that to be maybe a little on the weird side, and then looking for truly weird things, which I believe I found a lot of. I'll give you a few examples.
Sure.
One of them, there was a goat toenail bracelet, a bracelet made entirely from pretty large goat toenails. Gross dentures, just a pile of used dentures.
How much was that going for?
The dentures sold for almost $40 and had 12 bids on them.
You're kidding me.
Yeah, they were in high demand for whatever reason. There was a hornet's nest, and the hornet's nest is actually quite nice. And I emailed the seller a question about that, and I asked if the hornets would be attracted to it and then seek shelter inside, or if I could stuff it with candy and make it into a piñata because I do oddball children's parties. And the guy said, no, the hornets would not be attracted to the nest. It would make a great piñata. I never thought of that. And he continued to say that it's got beautiful pink and blue colors around it, and it would be perfectly safe. So and that only sold for $225. So that was a pretty good deal.
How
so,
weird!
Yeah, all kinds of weird things. I mean, someone sold their soul, which was interesting.
They sold their soul.
Sold their soul.
How much did the soul go for?
Well, it got up to three bids at 71 cents, but then eBay closed it, I guess, because
somebody caught it.
Right. Souls, yeah, but it was up there for a little bit. Funeral eye caps, which are a little on the creepy side. Yeah, I mean, all kinds of just weird things. You know, someone sold one old boot, a duct tape necktie. You know, people cut some just weird things they make. Things like a Siamese twin M&M candy. They thought that was odd enough to try and sell. That sold for a dollar.
Did they sell baseball cards on it and stuff like that too?
Oh, well, I mean, you could certainly find that on there, but that wasn't for the book.
You wanted the weird.
I wanted only the weird stuff, as weird as I could find, and kind of crossing different.
What was the strangest, categories. The goat's necklace or the dentures or something
the goat,
else?
The goat bracelet was stranger. I mean, there's some other good ones like the bull scrotum bag, which was pretty odd. And one of my favorites, which was one of the first ones I found in researching that kind of really got things going, was it was the deer poop paperweight, which the woman called a pooperweight, which I thought was pretty clever. And she would go around collecting animal droppings, and then she would put them into a little crystal paperweight and decorate it with some, you know, what looked like snowflakes. And
how much did that go for?
That was only $6.95.
What a deal.
Yeah, and what I love about it is, I mean, not just the oddity of the object, but thinking about the effort that went into making that object.
Now, how did you find these on eBay? Was there a special search for something? You put in weird stuff or what?
There were a couple ways. So one is they have categories. I actually haven't looked for truly weird things like this in a while, but at least at the time they had categories called like weird, you know, totally weird, totally bizarre. So you could kind of just
click on weird.
You could do that. I mean, there was a lot of kind of junk. You know, you had to kind of find like the gems that were like a really good weird thing. But then it was also the other thing I would do is just type in a weird keyword and see what comes up. So in this case, I typed in poop and, just to see what would happen. And then this showed up. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, well, that's weird. So it was kind of a combination of just thinking of things that seemed odd and type in the word, a keyword, and see what comes out of it. And then just sort of scouring.
My,
you know, and
stick to ghosts. You have more fun with ghosts, huh?
Yeah, the ghost was much more fascinating for sure.
Let's take some calls. You ready?
Yeah.
Let's go to Dave in Columbus, Ohio. David, welcome to the program. Hi, David.
Oh, how you doing, George?
Great.
And your guest there. I hope you're having a good evening. I got my aunt and uncle went to this antique shop and outside of Columbus and bought a clown marionette.
Ooh.
Like where this was going.
And so they got it there. Well, 2 days later, stuff started falling off the wall. That was the first thing that started happening. After that, it only got worse. The kitchen stove would come off and on, and the clown puppet would end up in other rooms. And And they finally decided it had to be the puppet. They couldn't figure out anything else. So they had a priest come in, and he warned them about this puppet, and they did some research, and they found out later the owner originally had that clown puppet was burned up in a fire. It was a little 8-year-old boy.
Wow.
And they figured that his spirit was still with that puppet. So they took the puppet, took it out of the house, and buried it. And they didn't have no more problems then. But when I was at the house one time and seen a clock fly past me, and I got the heck out. And I'll tell you, George, it was scary. And
I bet.
And I want to ask your guests, does spirits follow certain toys? And I'll hang up and listen for my answer.
Okay, sure thing. Spirits do attach themselves to objects, don't they?
Well, you definitely hear stories like that for sure. I mean, that's a great story, first of all. It immediately reminded me of the famous case Ed and Lorraine Warren had with Annabelle.
Yes,
which is
the doll.
A huge movie franchise.
That's right.
Yeah, the real Annabelle was more like a Raggedy Ann type of doll, which they were convinced was basically the same kind of thing you were just describing, the soul of a child that was found its way into this object. But what I really love about your story is the fact that you said that when they buried it, that took care of it.
It stopped.
And I don't mean that just because it was away. I mean, but what's interesting is that
it was like a proper thing to do.
Exactly. And there are so many cases that go all the way back through human history where the story of the ghost was it was looking for a proper burial and the respectful, paying respects basically to their life. So one case I talked about in the book was from Pliny the Younger wrote in 100 AD. About a ghost that was seen by a Greek philosopher named Athenodorus, who saw like the apparition of this ghost in the house he bought that was supposedly haunted. It was like the classic, chains, rattling in the night and all these kinds of things. And he sees the apparition of the ghost, and the ghost walks out into the backyard, and this Athenodorus follows the ghost, and the ghost disappears into the ground. And Athenodorus digs up into that spot, and he finds a skeleton with bones that are bonded with a chain and realized it wasn't buried properly. So he gives it a proper burial, and the disturbances came to an end. And it's one of those things that you see a common thread across different cultures that if the body doesn't have a proper burial, there are disturbances. So it's interesting that you just described a case like that.
Next up, let's go to Brendan in Austin, Texas. Brendan, hello there.
Hey, thanks so much, George and Mark.
Thank you.
So you guys were talking about trigger objects earlier, and I thought that was funny because a lot of times people are looking to pay a lot of money to get objects that have, sentimental value to like celebrities to try to, bring them into a seance, like Houdini and whatnot. But, so the question that I had for Mark was, what oddity was the most impactful for you? Whether it's eBay or Ripley's Believe It or Not or Guinness or thank you.
Oh, wow. That's a tough one. I mean, I think you're generally
all of the above, oddity, right?
Yeah. What oddity do I treasure the most? Because I have a lot in my collection. Gosh, that's a tough one. I have a collection of giant rings, which are rings from Sideshow Giants, which I just think are awesome just because they kind of go back to what I talked about at the beginning of the show with Robert Wadlow and just that enormous size that the human body can be capable of reaching. And you feel that in these ginormous rings, that they're like the size of a silver dollar could pass through it, That's great. I have a two-headed turtle that's preserved in the jar, which is an amazing object, which I'm fascinated by. Again, same kind of thing that's just amazing that life can take on these different forms, that they're not usual. I have a lot of odd things. I have a trephine, medical device, antique medical device that would drill holes in the skull, kind of thing that might have happened to the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum potentially and caused some haunted souls. But you think about the past of that object and the history behind it and what it may have done, and that's a bit haunting in itself.
The English general, Oliver Cromwell, who died in 1658, you wrote a book about his embalmed head. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so this is a story I came across when I was researching. I had a book idea for stories of posthumous adventures of body parts. And when I came across Cromwell's head, like you said, he passed away in 1658. He was the Lord Protector of England, Ireland, and Scotland. And he was embalmed in Westminster Abbey. But then when Charles II restored the monarchy in 1661, he exhumed the body, and he was angry about Cromwell basically being responsible for beheading his father, Charles I. So he hanged Cromwell's embalmed body and beheaded it posthumously, took that embalmed head, severed embalmed head, put it on a pike atop Westminster Hall, and it sat there for about 25 years. Jeez. Until it broke off in a storm and then got picked up and passed around. And Cromwell's head traveled around England for till 1960 when it was reburied. So the head had 300 years of adventures. So I wrote the memoirs of that head's adventures all from its perspective.
He died young too, what, about 58 or 9, something like that?
Yeah, relatively young, yeah.
Next up, let's go east of the Rockies. Dora's with us in New Jersey. Hello, Dora.
Hello, George. Hello, Mark. George, I wake up when you was talking about Houdini.
You woke up? You mean you fell asleep during my show, Dora?
I fell asleep in the first time, yes. And I wake up when you was saying about Houdini, about Emilio. And I want to tell you, remember I talk about I live in Tony Curtis' mansion?
Yep, Tony Curtis' mansion.
It was Houdini who was around because he caught Shane. And
Curtis played Houdini in a movie.
That's it, but I didn't know who was Houdini because I hear magician, but I didn't know until I was talking in my house with my cousin in New York in the phone, and he told me, and my grandmother here, and she say, "You mean Larry Houdini?" I say, "Do you know what I am talking?" And grandma say, "Of course, he met your grandfather. Remember that I told you my grandfather was a top Navy commander?"
Yep.
Okay.
I remember that.
Okay, so my grandmother say that Houdini want to jump in the Almendares River.
That's right. He liked doing that stuff.
So I don't know if he did or no, but grandma say that somebody told him contact my grandfather for the okay or to tell him where to go. So that is what I know about Houdini. But in the house, I believe I met him once, but I think I told you one time I mistake him with a guest.
He looked that real to you? You thought he was a guest, huh?
I came in from my day job, and I go by the diner, big dining room. It was a little dark, and a man say hello to me. So I say hello. So I went to the kitchen, and I told the German girl, we were the two in the house, "Why did you tell me it's a guest in the house?" And she say, "What guest? Is nobody here?" I say, "The man in the dining room say hello to me." So she came with me, but there was no man in the dining
room. He was gone. What was he wearing?
The one I saw, I don't know if it was him. He was not too tall. He wear a shirt, a little fluffy, I don't know if it's fluffy, in the front, a little strange.
Mm-hmm.
And he has like a coral hair. But I tell you, it was not too much lying.
Well, I got to tell you, Dora, Houdini was not very tall, was he, Mark?
No, I don't think he was that tall at all.
He was small, and he kind of wore those fluffy shirts.
Yeah, I think, just the style at the time, right?
So she may have seen him. What do you think?
I mean, if you saw him, that would be pretty incredible. I'd want to know more. I want to hear more from him.
Do you take emails from people?
Absolutely. Of course, yeah.
Through your website?
Yes.
Okay. Dora, you might want to do that. Tell him a little bit more about Houdini in Tony Curtis's house where she stayed. And Tony Curtis, of course, played Houdini in a movie.
Yeah, I'd love to hear more.
That's fascinating. I enjoy that. Next up, do we have time? Yeah, time for one more quick call before the break. Pete in North Carolina. Hello, Peter. Go ahead.
Hey, George. Great show. Got a quick Houdini story you might be interested in.
Sure.
This is documented, too. This is concerns a young Groucho Marx went to see Houdini perform when he was a kid. And Houdini had this trick where he'd swallow a needle and thread and then cough it up with the needle threaded. So Houdini asked for a volunteer from the audience, right? And naturally, Groucho goes up and he says, young man, I want you to look in my mouth and see if there's any devices or apparatuses. And so he opens his mouth and Groucho looks in and he says, young man, what do you see? And Groucho says, pyorrhea.
Which is gum disease, by the way.
Yeah. Anyway.
Groucho, he started early, didn't he?
Well, he was already, Marx Brothers were already starting to get famous in
Vaudeville.
And Groucho, according to the story, used to shave his mustache off so he wouldn't get noticed in public. He was a young guy at the time, you know.
That's funny. I love it. Thanks, Peter. I like that story. We're going to take calls next half hour, by the way, with Mark Hartzman. Ghost stories, share them, or questions about ghosts as well. What would you say, Mark, is the scariest thing that happened to you?
To me?
Yeah.
Oh, boy, that's a good question. I haven't had...
Or you've never been scared?
I haven't had a particular experience with a ghost that would have scared me.
Really? You mean these investigations, you haven't stumbled across something that scared the living daylights out of you?
No, and I've been open to it.
You're waiting, aren't you?
I've been waiting and receptive.
How about people who've been with you? Have they been scared?
No, but I've definitely talked to people who had really great stories. So what I kind of loved was talking to friends and coworkers, just telling them I was working on the book, and they would come out and share these stories with me, which was really interesting. They had some good scary stories. So I get into a few of those in the book where, again, things that are just kind of hard to explain. I'll give you one quick example. Some friends here in town have two young kids, and one of the first daughter had said that she would see a woman at night who was always looking over her at her bed and was scaring her. And had a name for her. And then that went away after a little while. And then they had a second child, another baby. And the older sister now said that the woman had come back and she was seeing her again. And the baby, they said they would see the baby in her crib. And they'd watch her eyes tracking across the room as if it was following someone.
The baby was following someone? Wow.
Going back and forth. They found out later that the house, the previous owner of the house, had two daughters that had passed on. So the mother of these two young girls said to the ghost or the spirit that was seemed to be there, said, I know you're trying to look after my girls, but I've got this. You can go. It's okay.
I love that. Mark, we're going to come back and take final calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to our final segment with Mark Hartzman as we're talking about his latest book, Chasing Ghosts. His websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Mark, one of our listeners, Tyler, sent me a picture of his... He was at 5 years ago at the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum in West Virginia. And the picture he sent me clearly shows some bizarre entity in the background. It's really strange.
Oh, wow.
Must be a haunted place, huh?
It sure seems to be.
I sent it to our webmaster, Lex. Maybe he'll post it tomorrow on our website.
That'd be great.
Since you've been doing this, do you still continue? I mean, what's your next project?
Next project, I was actually just working on a little bit before getting on the phone here, is on UFOs.
Oh, really? What's your angle?
I'm going to kind of cover it in a similar way as the ghost book, just kind of going back a little bit through historical sightings, different kinds of craft that people have claimed to have seen, from individual sightings to mass sightings, what these objects might be, if there's explanations or not. getting into current goings on, you know, all the stuff that's been going on in the past, you know, few years, which is really fascinating, especially with the Navy pilots and the footage that's been released, the footage of the Tic Tac UFO, of course, off the Nimitz, like some of these more current things, and then the government statements that have been coming out lately. So just kind of getting into the past, a little bit of the present, and a little bit of the science behind it as well in terms of trying to make contact with extraterrestrials.
Let's go to the phones. Monica's with us in Reese, Oregon. And Monica, Tom tells me it's your birthday. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Happy birthday.
Perfect. Go ahead.
Thank you.
You're on with Mark.
Hey. Hi. Good evening, guys.
Hello.
So I have a question and a comment and another comment, maybe with a question. Okay. Let's see. My first question is, you know, what do you think of, like, a direct person, a direct channel, somebody who can actually channel a spirit person? My next comment would be, I am also, personally for myself, I am a direct channel. I do channel someone, and he saved my bacon on many occasions, including, like, finding my glasses for me because I have really bad eyesight. And the third would be, you know, I'm just wondering about Houdini, you know, who says he wants to study, like, from, quote, unquote, the other side, whatnot. I'd be curious, you know, if, say, Houdini established a relationship with, you know, someone here, how things would go, that kind of thing. I'm not quite sure how to ask that question, but anyway.
All right, well, let's deal with the channeling first. What have you uncovered about channeling, Mark, or channelers?
Well, I think it's something that could be possible. I mean, you said that you do it yourself, so it's one of those questions of, like, okay, is a spirit able to go through a particular person, and what's able to come through that person? In some cases, I mean, I think one of the examples I gave earlier on, where information was coming through Leora Piper, that's, you know, how would she get information if it wasn't coming from some sort of spirit going directly through her? So that's interesting. And then there's also people who are channeling people and able to do automatic writing. Lots of interesting cases of that, some of which might seem more possible than others. But yeah, I think it's definitely interesting in the possibility.
And of course, that she was talking about Houdini without a specific question about him, but.
I think she was asking, if he made contact with anyone?
Yeah, I was going to say, do you think the spirit of Houdini is still out there?
I think if it is, he hasn't been able to break through yet. I mean, I would love to think that he is, but I don't think anyone's come through with evidence that it feels, you know, solid that that's definitely Houdini. But I'd love to see that. I think he'd be the ideal candidate to do it.
And she had an entity that helped her find her glasses. How about that?
That's I love that a ghost can be helpful. I think there's some fun stories about ghosts helping people.
Are they also mischievous?
I think they can be. I think, you know, if you have spirits, you can have all kinds of spirits. But I do love the stories where they bring some good in people's lives.
Let's go to Jim, first-time caller on the Big Island in Hawaii. Hello, Jim. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Good evening, George and Mark.
Hi.
I've got two things I want to put out there to you. First one is kind of quick. We were in the carnival business when I was about 10 or 11 to 18. And when my dad and stepmom were too far away, I'd be at home with grandma to go to school. Well, I had my radio on. She told me, Jimmy, it's time to go to bed. So I said, okay, Grandma, I turned off my radio, turned off light. I got into bed. And then a few minutes later, I thought I heard the radio come on, turn on, go to full blast, and then off. And I thought, I'm just hearing stuff. And then Grandma came to the room. She said, Jimmy, I told you to turn the radio off. Did not turn it on. And the second one is a little bit more strange. My stepmom never did want her picture taken. And in the carnival business, there was a guy who did a high wire act, and I finally talked her into getting her picture taken. I'd snuck one of her earlier, a couple years earlier. She didn't know that I took it. But anyway, on this particular instance, I took several pictures of her, Rudy, and Jaylene, and before their act. And then I kind of forgot about the film and the camera. It was like a Kodak Instamatic. And then she passed away, giving birth to my brother. And Dad started saying, oh, I wish we had some pictures of Carol. And then I said, wait a minute, Dad. I took some pictures of her and Rudy at I forget what spot we were at. It was a park we were set up in with SJM Fiesta shows. And so I finished off a couple pictures in on the roll. I went and got it developed. There was pictures on the negative. The pictures came out, but then the ones where she was supposed to be, there was nothing. And the negatives,
wow,
where she was supposed to be in the pictures, were all blank.
How do you explain that, Mark?
That's weird.
That is strange. I thought maybe he was going to say there were orbs in the picture or something, but she wasn't even there.
Yeah, it seems like you'd expect to hear the opposite, that he took the picture and saw an image of her there when there was no one there to begin with. But you're having the opposite experience. That sounds like the spirit did not want to be seen, even in the afterlife, and was able to affect something. But that's an interesting way to affect the material world. That's a pretty good story. And also, I'll just say, I love the fact that you mixed in ghosts and carnival slash sideshow. So that's great.
That's neat.
Two things I love.
You got it. Jim, thank you. We take texts and tweets. What do you have, Tom?
Mark, this is from Candy in the Ozarks. I like to ghost hunt. When I go, does location dictate where I might see more ghosts than not?
You know, I don't know. I think people have places they say are haunted, but I don't necessarily think that that makes such a difference. I also don't think you're more likely to see stuff at night. I think you see that on all the shows, you know, it's spookier.
Sure.
But a spirit's going to be, I think, where a spirit's going to be. And that might be just related to where they lived, who their friends and loved ones are that maybe they want to reach out to. So I don't know how much that matters. I do think places that are supposedly haunted might have you primed to think you're seeing something or feel you're seeing something, whereas being anywhere else, you might just feel something that's more genuine.
Let's go out to Massachusetts. Cynthia's with us. Hello, Cynthia. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Basically what it is that, I've experienced, within my family. I think it's stronger on my mother's side of the family, but they're now all deceased. But, thing that I'm emphasizing is that my aunt had her birthday and I missed it. And so I only called the next day, but I missed it. And something happened that night, and then when I called, my cousin told me that Auntie was in the hospital. She had fallen into a coma.
Oh, geez.
So I had went to the hospital, and the rest of the family was there, and Uncle was near her. And I says, Uncle, do you want me to pray for Auntie to live, Auntie to go? And he says, Auntie to go. And so I went into deep prayer. Of course, people don't realize my method, but I still do it. And I was like, all of a sudden, I was feeling chest pains, like I was having a heart attack. And it was like, excuse me, I've got to go home. So on the way home, I kept praying and praying on the way home. And I kept praying until I got a phone call that an hour and a half later, Auntie had passed. And then, not expecting anything, but Auntie came to me. And I heard her voice at night. And she wanted to relate a message to my uncle. And she says, it's okay how you feel. And so I felt an obligation to do that because she had come to me. I could hear her voice as clear as her talking to me on the phone or in person and stuff like that. And so the next day uncle was around, a lot of family and stuff like that, and I had whispered to him what Auntie had said. And he was very angry with me and ordered me out of the house. And I left and I went home. I says, Auntie, I did my best. And I went home, and the very next day, my uncle has never been to my house, and he came and knocked on my door. I opened the door. He had a whole bouquet of flowers for me, and I had a couch, things to sit down on. He sat on the floor while I sat in the recliner chair and said nobody knew what had happened. It was her birthday. That evening, Auntie had said to him, I am not going to be here tomorrow. And he was very angry with her, saying, yes, you're going to be, not knowing that she was already eluding that she wasn't going to be there.
Well, she knew. She knew she was going to pass on. Do a lot of ghosts, before they become ghosts, know that, Mark?
Yeah, I think the story you just gave, I think, is really interesting. First of all, I was gonna say, there's a couple things I was thinking when you were telling it. One is that one of the common things that I heard from parapsychologists is that a large majority of ghost experience are bedside apparitions, someone who's just passed away and comes back and leaves a message like you're describing. It also makes me think back to what we were talking about earlier with the psychopomps, who were leading the dead to find the afterlife, but also their purpose was to help the living. And so it's almost like the purpose you were serving, you know, delivering this message that might put your uncle at ease and so the living could get back to life. So yeah, I think it's a really interesting story.
Bill, Los Angeles, let's squeeze you in real fast. Bill, go ahead.
Hi, George. I just wanted to ask Mark if he thinks it's possible that many of these so-called ghosts are actually holograms rather than something related to the physical person who's gone, because their clothing and their ages seem to match up to things that we expect, even though those things would be impossible and they would have decomposed by now. I just wonder what he thought of that.
And if they were holograms, Bill, who would have sent them?
That's the $64,000 question. I have no idea.
All right, interesting. Could they be holograms, Mark?
I think if it was a hologram, it would have to be a lot of people really having a lot of intricate plans to devise something like that. And they're very coordinated and would have to be very recent if it was a technical hologram. But I think just in terms of the way they appear, one thought is that the ghost would appear to you the way that they see themselves at their best. So someone, you might, if you're a certain age, you might see yourself in your head as your best version of you at maybe a younger age, when you were maybe at your, peak of health and appearances and things like that. And so that might explain why you're wearing certain clothes and why you're wearing clothes at all versus not wearing clothes. On the flip side, it also might be how the person receiving that spirit might project onto them in terms of what they would imagine them to look like. So, I don't know that they're holograms, but there could be other things going on besides a hologram.
Mark, I want to thank you for being on the program. Good luck with Chasing Ghosts. Just came out, and keep in touch, okay?
Thanks so much, George. I appreciate it.
You take care of yourself. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Alex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, Tim Banal, George Knapp, and Ian Punnett, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.